I'm Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is
True Crime New England,
Case Profiles Edition.
Hello, welcome back to another mini episode.
We are so excited to have you here on our proverbial journey through case profiles, mini episodes, and these terrible, terrible, terrible stories of people of color who just do not get enough media attention. Isn't that right, Katie?
That is absolutely right, Liz. And the way that we do this is, of course, it's a mini episode, and we tell you guys, as well as each other, about cases of people of color based in New England who, like you said, Liz, do not get enough attention, whether it's from the media, whether it's from law enforcement. And I feel as though, as a direct result, that lack of attention is related to the majority of the cases we cover on this format being unsolved.
Mm. Absolutely. And, you know, everybody knows New England is predominantly white. It's just a fact. And these cases, murders, abductions, suspicious deaths, disappearances, these people of color just don't get all that attention. And our goal, of course, is to bring that attention as much as we can with our small audience. And for that, we are grateful. Whether it is a full episode, a mini episode, or even just simply a post on Instagram with a website post, we will do whatever we can. How this format works is that Katie has researched a case. I do not know about it. She will tell me and you, our lovely listeners, about this case. I have not heard of it. Most likely you have not heard about it, lovely listeners. My oohs, my ahs are genuine. I don't know anything about this. And in turn, when I tell my story, Katie has not heard of it. Katie does not know the details. Her oohs, her ahs, her questions are all real as well. The element of surprise is here. We do our own research. This is all just storytelling, essentially, and bringing out these stories as much as we can to get attention to all these unsolved and sometimes solved stories. Now, Katie, I went first last week. Today, it is your turn to give us, no doubt, a terrible story that will make us all feel really sad, but ultimately feel good to know that we are bringing awareness an awful, awful case of a person of color who was no doubt wronged.
I will be telling you, Liz, as well as our lovely listeners, about the disappearance of Marlon Devine Santos.
Okay.
My sources today include The Charlie Project, The Worcester Telegram, and Unresolved Mysteries Reddit thread.
Nice.
In August of 1998, two-month-old Marlon Devine Santos was placed in a foster home in the 100 block of Eastern Avenue in Worcester, Massachusetts.
2 months old? Okay.
The people responsible for being his caregivers were Jose Castillo and Yolanda Castillo. Marlon's biological mom was houseless and often left him under the care of other people for days at a time.
Oh.
Sometimes they were friends of hers, and sometimes they were total strangers.
Oh.
When Marlon was born, he went through withdrawals from drugs and was found to have drugs in his system at birth,
yeah,
indicating, of course, that his mom also struggled with substance abuse and was using during her pregnancy.
Mm.
At this time, Marlon's father was actively seeking custody over him.
Mm.
Baby Marlon, now 5 months old, was last seen on November 5th, 1998, but his foster parents did not report him missing or alert authorities until 2 days later.
What?
Aside from Yolanda, the last person to see Marlon was Yolanda and Jose's 17-year-old biological child, who saw him at noon on November 5th, but then left the house before Marlon disappeared. Yolanda claimed that her husband was on a day trip in New York on the day that Marlon disappeared. As for her own whereabouts, she said that she left Marlon and two other foster children, ages 2 and 3, in the house alone between 1 and 2 p.m. so she could go to East Middle School, 8 miles away, to pick up her two biological children.
What? I get it's 1998, okay? But no fucking way. Anyone in their right mind. Are you serious?
Ages 2 and 3 were the other foster children in the home. And she left 5-month-old Marlon, just all these kids. Okay, bye, I'll be back. Left for like an hour.
Holy
or
shit.
So. Even if she left for 5 minutes, I don't care.
No.
Yep. Many words I want to call this woman, but a responsible caretaker and mother are not in my vocabulary.
Yeah, no.
Yolanda then says that she waltzed back home with her two biological children. who she clearly prioritized.
Of course.
And that when she came home, Marlon was gone.
You know, as a 5-month-old baby, the walking skills and the directional skills are quite high. It's when they peak, actually. So he probably just walked away. They can't even crawl at that age.
Correct.
What the fuck?
Don't worry, though. Don't worry. Rather than calling police, mm-hmm. she got in her car and drove all the way to New York to pick up Jose.
Oh, well, the baby probably drove there. What the that is?
Uh-huh.
I can't.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Once baby Marlon was reported missing, the other 4 foster children in this home were immediately removed by social services.
Good. Okay.
6 weeks later, Yolanda and Jose's 6 biological children were removed from the home. There were 11 children total in this house.
What the hell?
In this clusterfuck.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Ooh.
Under the care of these 2... I have a lot of words I could use to say for them. These 2
people.
Imbeciles.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The biological children were returned several weeks later, but obviously the foster children were placed in other housing.
I don't know how even the biological children were rehomed there.
Here's one of my favorite details.
Okay. Oh, no.
Yolanda and Jose were both ministers. Surprise, surprise. And had 51 foster children in their care since 1993.
Holy shit.
I won't go off here about the need for these sociopaths to do good, to feel good about themselves, when really they're doing more harm than good, aka mission trips.
Oh, God. Don't.
But
even...
that's a whole other episode for a whole other day. Yeah, we won't go there.
Don't even get us started.
Just implying.
Yeah.
Multiple reports of neglect and abuse were made against them prior to Marlon's disappearance, but none of these accounts were ever substantiated.
Wow.
AKA, this could have been prevented, as could have the multiple accounts of abuse and neglect. I totally think that there were other children being abused in this home.
1,000%.
Mm-hmm. Both Jose and Yolanda have refused to cooperate with the police regarding Marlon's disappearance. Jose himself has an extensive criminal record, with all charges having been when he was living in Puerto Rico, which is where he's from.
Uh-huh.
In 1999, he was charged with sexually assaulting 3 female children, one of them being his own stepdaughter, and 2 being his own former foster children.
Okay.
These sexual abuse allegations were uncovered during the investigation into Marlon's disappearance. In October of 1999, police received information that Marlon's remains were buried on the banks of the Wachusett Reservoir off of Route 70 in Boylston, Massachusetts. When the area was searched, police found torn baby clothing, a diaper, and some pieces of plastic, which they thought could have been used to wrap up Marlon's body.
Oh.
Some police officers feel as though the findings are unrelated to Marlon's disappearance and that he wasn't brought there at all, especially because they couldn't find any evidence of human remains, bodily fluids, anything, and that the items, the clothing, everything they found did not have any hair, any blood, or other bodily fluids used for DNA testing, which is a little strange given that they found a diaper.
Yeah.
And Marlon was 5 months old at this time, and given that he was absolutely no doubt in my mind being neglected.
Right.
And was left with other children ages 2 and 3. Like, they were not changing his diaper.
No. They were most likely, I mean, even the 3-year-old was most likely in diapers themselves.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Totally. And so I do think that the things that they found on this riverbank were unrelated to Marlon's disappearance. I buy that theory. Mm-hmm. Like, the police think it was unrelated. I think so, too.
Sure.
Especially because they couldn't find any DNA. Authorities stated there were multiple inconsistencies in Yolanda and Jose's stories, and police feel that they murdered Marlon and are investigating this as a possible homicide. Both of Marlon's biological parents have been ruled out as suspects.
Okay.
Some people think that his dad came in and abducted him, which honestly, I think would have been a fucking blessing that his biological father, who was actively seeking custody over this child,
yeah,
and who wanted him,
yeah,
and loved him and would have taken great care of him, I think that that would have been a blessing.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened.
Yeah.
And obviously the dad didn't, like, take him and kill him. Like,
no.
The dad is totally cleared.
Yeah.
Police have a theory that Marlon was either sold, potentially in New York, or was killed. either accidentally or intentionally.
Yeah.
Another one of the kids in the home could have accidentally killed Marlon, especially if they were left alone together. And it seems as though this was a frequent occurrence. You know, a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old could have been toddling around and, like, fallen on top of him, yeah, or...
They have soft spots.
Right, right. Or, like, try to pick him up and drop him, yes, or, like, drop a toy on his head, tuck him in with a blanket, and he, yeah, could have suffocated anything.
Absolutely, absolutely.
He also could have died from abuse, yeah, or neglect, which is also a highly likely scenario. Like we talked about earlier, Marlon was born with drugs in his system and was withdrawing after he was born. Mm-hmm. And babies who are born with drugs in their systems are typically very fussy, very difficult. They have this really, mm-hmm, distinct, shrill cry.
I can hear it right now. I take care of these babies often, and it is it's a withdrawing baby. It's different than nicotine. Babies withdraw from nicotine all the time. This is a very distinct, high-pitched shriek, and it is the worst sound, and it is constant. And this, we're talking newborns, like, mm-hmm, babies whose lungs are still, like, new. It is the worst, and it will drive you crazy.
Right.
It will.
Right. And even as they age out of, so to speak, that, right, shrill cry, as they get older,
yeah,
they're still really fussy. They're, mm-hmm, really difficult. Like, their body and their whole system has been strung out,
yeah,
since they were in the womb.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to be difficult babies. And, yeah, so the theory is that Marlon was being really fussy and he, mm-hmm, wouldn't settle down. And he's just so, like, in their eyes, needy and demanding, and, right, he won't ever shut up and this and that. So that they got tired of him and they shook him, or they suffocated him, or they were rough with him because they were frustrated intentionally or accidentally.
Right.
And he died and they did something with his body.
That's.
Several months after the baby clothing and other items were found on the riverbank, in the year 2000, Jose was convicted for the assault of one of his former foster daughters and was sentenced to a whopping 5 to 7.5 years in prison.
What?
Mm-hmm. So he's out now. Hopefully that conviction would prevent him from having access to other foster children.
I bet you he went right back to being a minister, though.
Correct. Probably.
Mm.
Yep. As for sweet little Marlon, anyone with any information on the whereabouts of Marlon Devine Santos is asked to please call the Worcester Police Department at 508-799-8651.
This whole story, I've had my head in my hand, and I can't. How did these people get to be approved for foster care and then continue? Despite these allegations, how did he get approved with allegations and charges from back home in Puerto Rico? How is that Puerto Rico is a part of America? It's not like it was hard to see the record.
Right, right. And to be fair, police didn't find out about that until they were investigating Marlon.
Okay.
But Child Protective Services should have found that. They, yes, should have looked into who they are giving these. They, yes, fostered 51 children in the span of 5 years.
Oh.
How the fuck did these people get... They clearly were doing it for the money.
Yep.
They clearly were doing it because they think that they're so high and mighty because they're ministers.
Yep.
It's always the people who do good, quote unquote,
for God.
For God, and to validate themselves. Like, they think that they are the salt of the earth, mm, because they're doing good, quote unquote, but really they're doing more harm than good.
Oh my God.
There's no way in hell that Jose only sexually assaulted those 3 girls.
Oh, no.
There's no way in hell it wasn't more.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Especially with the multiple accounts of abuse. And, like, this child was failed literally before he was even born because his, yeah, mother was houseless.
Yeah.
She was out on the street. She was using drugs.
Yeah.
He was placed into foster care, into the hands of these demons.
Yeah.
His father was actively trying to get custody over him.
Right.
Where's the delay in that process? Like,
ugh, that happened.
Could he not have fostered his own child? Like, come on.
That happens. And as someone who works with this kind of thing, I just watched this happen. It took 2 years for a dad to get custody of his child. 2 years for trying and, like, being normal.
Mm-hmm.
It happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy.
It's sickening. Yeah. It's sickening because meanwhile, these children are in the hands of strangers, even if they are competent, even if they are loving, even if they're not doing it for the money and they're genuinely good people.
Yeah.
That's still traumatic for these children.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now you place them into the hands of a pedophile,
right?
A literal pedophile
who
clearly they're filling their house. They had 11 kids in their house.
Ugh.
Clearly they're doing this for the money. Clearly they prioritize their own biological children as opposed to these foster kids.
No kidding.
This case especially was so fucking enraging.
Yeah.
So enraging.
I'm so mad right now.
Mm-hmm.
This poor baby.
Heartbreaking.
I have a really bad feeling he is very long dead.
Yeah. For sure.
Very long dead.
Yep.
He would have been just 2-3 months older than me. So I imagine he's been dead for 25 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there's part of me that's like, maybe they did sell him. Maybe he is part of some, that's why Jose went to New York, maybe to maybe sell him to some illegal adoption ring. I hope so.
I hope he's alive and well.
That'd be great. I hope that he had his name changed.
Yes.
He's been living a whole double life with parents and is being loved. My gut is telling me that that's not the case, but I'm hoping that that's what happened.
Oh my God. That's terrible. Jesus. That's the worst. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Liz.
Yeah.
What story do you have to share with us today?
It's pretty bad. That was pretty bad though. I'm going to tell you, Katie, and our lovely listeners about the Eldon Street John Doe's. I have three sources for you guys today. Stories of the Unsolved. Unresolved Mysteries Reddit thread, a post there, in an article from the Bronx Times. It was roughly 2 p.m. on October 6th, 1988, when someone was walking through a wooded lot on Eldon Street in Dorchester, Massachusetts, when they made a gruesome and no doubt life-changing discovery. This person found the decomposing body of a black teenage boy who was clothed and shot execution style. Yeah. When investigators arrived to the scene, they made another horrifying discovery. Just a few feet away was a second body, also of a black teenage boy, who was shot execution style as well. The only difference was he was hidden beneath a tarp. Yes. Nearby their bodies was a 16-inch long roll of foam that had gunpowder residue on it, as well as a Reebok gym bag. Very bizarre scene. Very tragic scene. What the hell? And again, this poor person who's walking through a lot makes this discovery. Jesus Christ. The investigators who arrived on the scene believe that the boys had both been shot either a few days or a few weeks before they were found, but crazy insect activity had made it impossible to identify them. Yeah. They also had been exposed to the elements, which in October and for only a short amount of time could prove to be pretty challenging in making an identification. The police released what little information they had to the public, for sure feeling frustrated and angry that they had two dead boys and no way to identify them. And for a while, it kind of seemed like it was a dead end because there was just no clue who they were. Like, their faces were not identifiable. It was, no matter how long they had been dead, it was just clear that they were, you couldn't make any sense out of who they were. And then one day, after the boys had been discovered, a woman was brought into the police station on a drug charge. And it was here little bits of this case of these two boys kind of began to unravel. She started by saying she knew the boys. She said they were two members of a three-member group. And they dealt crack cocaine together. She said she sometimes helped them move these drugs. The woman said that one of the boys went by Clayton and the other one, Hooker. The third boy, who was not discovered deceased, was known as Flip. To me, that sounds like she just named three words. I don't know. She also was being arrested on a drug charge and claimed that these two teenage boys were dealing crack cocaine. So who knows how credible she is. She described Clayton as being between 14 and 16, being 5'4 and weighing 130 pounds. She then described Hooker as being between 15 and 17, 5'10", and being 160 pounds. Notably, Hooker's face had a much higher level of decomposition, which made it much harder to identify him. It's unclear why he had a higher level of decomp, but it was said that they were killed at the same time. The woman also described who Flip was. She said he was between 17 and 19, he was 5'8", and he had a medium build. He supposedly had two gold front teeth, one of which had a moon on it and the other a star. That is very interesting and hard for me to picture, but must have been like a grill or something. I don't know. The woman stated that she believed the boys were from the Bronx, and her connections to drugs made the police potentially theorize that the two young boys perhaps encroached upon like enemy turf, overstepped, you know, whatever, and then that led to their murders. Except this doesn't account for Flip, however, and investigators believe that if this was true, that these two boys were Clayton and Hooker, maybe Flip made it back to the Bronx. Maybe. Another theory of the police, which was theorized because the other story came, you know, from the mouth of one drug-addicted woman, was that the boys were foster home runaways and had been unreported when they slipped out. I know. In 2014, a composite picture of Clayton was made and released in hopes of jogging memories of the missing and murdered boys, except that, of course, Hooker's face was so decomposed they couldn't do anything. And of course, even though this theory of them being like foster runaways, like, yeah, maybe they were, maybe they left together, doesn't explain why they were shot execution style. That's gruesome as hell. So it's like, why did that happen? And clearly this was a very violent and like angry person to have done that. Trying to exact revenge, who knows? If you know anything about this case, recognize the composite, or remember someone matching Flip's description, perhaps, contact Detective Cronin at 617-343-5837. And that is the Eldon Street John Does, or Clayton and Hooker, as they are rumored to be called.
Wow.
Very bizarre. I was reading that and I was like, I don't know how much I believe this woman. She sounds kind of insane and high on drugs and just making up things, but maybe she's telling the truth. Who knows? This was a very long time ago now, 88. So
wow,
it's been a long time. And to be shot execution style, clearly it was personal. I don't know, just terrible stuff.
Wow. She might be onto something though, because if that's where she was getting her drugs from, and now she doesn't have access to her dealers, and she's already being arrested, she might be like, yeah, well, who am I going to buy drugs from now in the future? You might as well know who they are. And she might have felt sympathy, too. Like, they're kids.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Saying 14 to 16? 14 years old. I know. Dealing crack cocaine.
Wow.
That is true. That's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Mm, breaks your heart. Especially because they were murdered. They're kids. Oh, I wish we could find this Flip guy.
I know.
If he is real. You know, he's a kid too. Well, anyway, guys, that covers it for our case profiles. That was kind of nuts. We want to know what you think, of course. Please let us know your thoughts and your theories regarding both of our cases here today. You can send us your thoughts and theories through Instagram, truecrimene. You can email us, truecrimene@gmail.com, or you can go to our website and send us your thoughts and feelings through our submission tool, truecrimene.com.
That submission tool allows you to be anonymous if you so choose. That is a great way to send us information. If you are close to a case, if it's a little too close to home for you, if it's a little sketchy, you can still send it our way. But yeah, you can leave your name on there too. And we are always, always, always looking for cases of people of color in New England. Please, solved, unsolved, lots of sources, not a lot of information. You guys would be very surprised at what we can do with just a little bit of info. Do not let the lack of information deter you. If, worst case scenario, we really do not have enough, we will still post about it on our Instagram and our website so that we are not back to square one and that these cases are getting out there in some capacity, in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. Well said, Katie. And with that, we'll see you on Thursday.
Bye.
Goodbye.